Hello and welcome to the Movie Robcast. This is Rob Daniel, and before we begin, just a little bit about what you are about to experience. So this is a review of Tommy Wiseau's new film, Big Shark. Tommy Wiseau, as I'm sure many of you will know, is the director of The Room, seen by many as possibly the worst film ever made, the subject of The Disaster Artist, the book by Tommy Wiseau's filmmaking partner at one point, Greg Sestero, which was turned into a film directed by and starring James Franco with Seth Rogen. So we saw this one at the Prince Charles Cinema in London, just off of Leicester Square. Tommy Wiseau is no stranger to that cinema. He's hosted many a screening of The Room there, and he did a Q&A for Big Shark, and we thought we would include some of that for your delectation. So we're going to start off with that. Well, actually, we're going to start off with the trailer, which doesn't reveal much. Then we're going to go into the Q&A, which is a few minutes long, and then we'll go into our thoughts on Big Shark. So yes, enjoy that, and thanks for listening, and on with the show.
Who's ready for a fight? You two, what's your name?
Jimmy.
What's your name?
Tony.
I want a good clean fight. Ready?
Yeah. Go.
Do not throw out the spoon. Big Shark stand by itself. It's a feature movie. It's nothing to do with The Room.
Let me tell you this way. Clint Eastwood, the perfect director. Tommy Wiseau, maybe his perfect director. But it's up to you. Move on. Next question.
Yes, go for it. What I'd like to know is, when you made Big Shark, were you inspired by other B-movies like Sharknado, Sharktopus, things like that?
The answer is definitely no.
Hey Tommy, thanks for doing this. I just wanted to know a little bit about your writing process and what tips you would have for
Vision, you don't want no vision. You have known the story, how you tell the story. That's, you need a vision. Move on, next question.
Very simple, but it's not as simple as you know. Yes, go for it, quick.
Hi Tommy, so right now Hollywood is very stressed. There's strikes, right? It's not this. Do you stand at the side in the Writers Guild?
Let me tell you, everybody have choice, especially in America, especially UK. What they're doing is right. I support them. The same token, you know, it is what it is. Hopefully they will resolve their differences. That's all I can say. Move on, next question.
Yeah. Hi Tommy. I'm a young filmmaker trying to break into the industry. I wondered if you had any tips about getting into the industry and
What do you want to be, actor or what?
Director.
Director. Did you direct anything?
I've directed a couple self-made shorts.
Good. Where are you? Do you have a trailer?
I do not.
You should have a trailer in your pocket. If you have a trailer and your phone in your pocket, you have halfway there. But try to keep going. Keep doing the short movie, something like this, nature. You know. Show on YouTube and be original. Don't steal from Big Shark or The Room. But it's not wrong to borrow some stuff. Move on, next question. Keep going, okay? I'm very fond of any filmmaker who try to ask me this question. Because you know what? We all people, we don't have no skill. By the way, do you want to hear one thing?
Yes!
Just recently, I asked my friend, do you need the skills? That was a girl. Probably I love all the girls. She said, no, I don't need any skills. I know everything. I said, look, this is a wrong answer. Because remember, all of you, including myself, we learn the skill as we go because of the technology name. But move on, next question. Yeah, go for it.
I've got more of a personal question, if you don't
mind. Oh, sure, you whatever, ask whatever you want. You don't have to ask me again.
So, in 1971, a man turned D.B. Cooper by the FBI,
yes,
stole $200,000 from an American airline,
yes,
jumped out with a parachute,
yes,
and disappeared.
Yes, and now, so what?
You have famously been quite restrictive on...
This completely nonsense. First of all, it's completely nonsense. Nobody, what's your name? Never mind your name, but let me tell you, better than internet. Don't believe it, garbage. Move on, next question. But you know what? Story is the story. Like somebody, I heard somebody say, Tommy's 120 years old. Maybe I'm 200. Who knows? Go for it. I'm sorry.
Hi, Tommy.
Go for it. Hi. Look at how beautiful. I'm sorry, I'm the man, okay? So, yeah, go for it.
What's the relationship between Big Shark and the room?
Good one. I said in the beginning conversation, you may find something which intrigues you, and maybe you say, hey, you know what? Maybe I have to watch again. But we'll see what happened, okay? So, it's connection a little bit. Definitely yes, because I direct the room as well, Big Shark. That's the one connection. The second connection is that you may see again and again. Who knows? I don't know. But thank you for asking.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Rose.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much. Yeah. You're my rose too. Whatever. Yeah, go for it. Yeah.
Good evening, Tommy. My name's Luke. How are you?
What's your question?
Okay, there's a particularly famous scene in The Room when you and Greg Sestero's character are sat on the rooftop.
Yes.
And then Mark delivers the famous line.
Yes.
I once knew a girl. She had a dozen guys.
Yes.
One of them found out about it. You beat her up so bad, she ended up in a hospital on Guerrero Street.
That's correct.
To which you reply, what a story, Mark.
Very nice.
And I read The Disaster Artist, but it still doesn't really explain the reason why. What moved you to laugh at that particular
thing? Because it's funny, that's why. Okay, touchdown. Dennis, we got it? Okay, touchdown. The last question. Yeah, go for it.
Hi, Tommy. Hi. So you said there's a link between The Room and Big Shark. Does that mean we can expect the Wiseau Cinematic Universe coming to roll?
Absolutely. Yes, thank you for asking. The answer is yes. Thank you very much. Send us email. Have fun with Big Shark. You can sing whatever you want with Big Shark as well. You can sing. Remember, sing. Thank you very much. I love you all.
Hello and welcome to the Movie Robcast. I'm your host, Rob Daniel, and as always, I am joined by my wonderful co-host, Mr. Rob Wallace.
Oh, hi, Rob.
And we are also joined by a special guest today. You'll have heard him before if you listen to the podcast. It is Adrian Zach.
Oh, hi, Rob.
Yeah, what is with you? Oh, hi, Rob. So what are we talking about today?
Today, we're talking about the second film of visionary auteur Tommy Wiseau, Big Shark.
Is it his second film, or did he co-direct a film a few years ago with Greg Sestero? Am I just imagining that?
Best Friends, and they...
Yeah,
but they
Fiends.
Put, Fiends, yeah, but is, yeah, they kind of ripped off the documentary, the...
Werner
Herzog documentary he did about Klaus Kinski.
Two and a half films, then.
In all fairness, if you were to look at somebody you could imagine that Tommy Wiseau has taken inspiration from, Klaus Kinski seems to be, at least I guess physically, probably the closest.
And in terms of acting style as well. Yeah, so we three brave souls have just done some teamwork, and that's a teamwork. Real in-joke for anybody who's seen the film. Seen Big Shark at the Prince Charles, we have literally stumbled out into the night sky. We are on Crime Alley, where we did The Flash, and we're going to talk about what just happened. So first of all, what's the plot of Big Shark? And good luck, Rob.
The plot of Big Shark is that there are three heroic firemen who take it upon themselves to kill a big shark that's mysteriously, spontaneously attacking people in New Orleans. but they really, despite the urgency of the situation, place a high priority on R&R.
Yeah, they. Yeah, that's actually a pretty good way to do it. Do you want to call up the cast so we can give the brave actors their due?
Yes. Yeah,
so
everybody on that earned their paycheck.
They did. And I would imagine they were paid, because I think one of the things about the room is that everyone got paid, apparently. They all got paid very well. Yeah, so there's Patrick, played by Tommy Wiseau. And there is Tim,
played by Isaiah Laborde.
Okay, and there's Georgie,
played by Mark Valeriano.
And I think he had a touch of the Greg Sestero about him. I think he was hired because he looked a little, well, he had that kind of vibe to him.
That's very on brand for this film.
Yeah, I thought he was channeling Tommy Wiseau.
Yeah, because he's got the hair.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Whereas the poor guy playing Tim seemed to be trapped in a film and being forced to act against his will. That was the impression I got.
Well, he was trying, because obviously so much of it is improv.
I think the entire film was improv while they were drinking. I think they were drinking real drinks as well.
That's the thing, because Tommy is slurring in a way that doesn't seem innate to him. He did a Q&A beforehand, and he's not always intelligible, but his diction's pretty good. And I'm pretty sure they shot the film sequentially, because you can just see the actors slowly having, and you can see the actor who plays Tim, who's his, you know, who's Patrick's best friend, Isaiah Laborde, trying desperately to repeat to get the improv back on track, or at least introduce some element of continuity
and get out of the scene.
Yeah, so like he'll bring back stuff they've referenced before, but Tommy will, or like, you know, yeah, Tommy just takes that as a cue to like do the whole bit again.
Yeah, there is a lot of that. It's like, this is like John Cassavetes made Jaws while very drunk and on quite a lot of prescription medication.
And they just cut the B-roll together and release that.
Yeah, because it's a weirdly kind of enjoyable hangout movie in some ways, because for an action film about them hunting and killing a big shark, a lot of it is just them hanging out with street performers or going to the bar for a beer.
They stop off at one point because Patrick's girlfriend, Sophia, played by Ashton Lee, and her friend Charlotte, played by Erica Mary Gilheeney, have stopped off to pick up some hats.
Oh yeah, there is a hat.
There's a lot of hat action. And that, my favourite bit actually being when he's wearing a top hat with a diving suit.
Yeah,
with a wetsuit. And also they didn't bother editing out him checking the inside of the hat with his torch to check which way round it goes, which is still in the film.
Well, that's what a person might do in that situation. I think Tommy Wiseau, I think so much of his rationale behind this is based on like, is the Ed Wood thing. It's like the, well, you know, what's it when the giant guy bangs his head on the door and he's like, well, actually he'd face that problem every day, so we can keep that in. Yeah. And it's like fidelity through something being shit. This film is very long.
Well, it's hour 45, so it's about the same length as Taxi Driver.
Very long, yeah.
But it also, it felt as if like it's like Jaws, but if they'd only focused on the dinner scene before the show, if they spent like an hour on that scene in real time and then chucked in a couple of shark attacks around
if
it.
If after the point that Ellen Brody said, do you want to get drunk and fool, let's get drunk and fool around, they'd just done that whole thing. They were just like,
In real time.
The sound.
What were the issues? And maybe you didn't have issues with the sound. If you did have issues with the sound, what were those issues?
Unintelligible, a lot of it.
Or loud. There are just dialogue scenes where it's mixed. Dialogue scenes where it's just absolutely deafening.
Yeah. There was one, I think it's actually the scene when the ladies go to buy the hats. It's not just loud, it's at a very, very high pitch. Because at one point I actually thought, I'm going to get my earbuds out and put them in my ears to act as ear defenders, because it's actually hurting a little bit to listen to this film right now, because it's such a high pitch. And it's so loud that it's just jarring. It's like scraping my nerves.
More of my orifices are bleeding right now than is normal.
Yes, I mean, if I'd had a shark attack me, I wouldn't have as much bleeding orifices.
We have to talk about the shark.
Which doesn't turn up until like half an hour into 20 minutes.
Well, they mention it, don't they? They mention it. He says, I've seen a shark, but no one else does.
It takes so long that I'm like, I don't think the shark's in the trailer. So all of a sudden it became like, is the shark a metaphor? Is this just going to be a walking and talking movie and the shark's a metaphor? I'd almost admire it if that was the case. But no, the shark is very real.
Let's talk about the shark, because the shark seems to vary in size. There's also a weird, because I kept expecting there to be some sort of New Orleans voodoo plot, because the shark appears, it's like someone throws a bucket of water on the ground, the shark sort of slides in to the street.
But we have to say, we have to say that the shark attacks on land, on dry land.
Because
it seems to have its own slip and slide.
It like summons water.
It's like summons shark. Water. It
it's
is ghost shark.
Ghost shark, yeah.
So water appears and the shark will then slide into the shot and...
Because it's not submerged, is it? It's kind of fluttering, skippering along like a mud skipper.
Yeah. Yeah, it's on dry land. It is on the streets of New Orleans eating people.
Seamlessly and integrated into the scene.
Well, it's like the shark is just on... Like, there are multiple scenes in it where like somebody's there and you're just waiting for them to get eaten and the audience starts like going, oh! And then all of a sudden the shark just comes through the shot, munches them and disappears off the other side of the screen.
Well, that's the thing is... Because there were some elements of this where it was like, I think he might know what he's doing on some of this, or maybe it's just a happy accident. But the audience were going, oh, because you never knew which side of the frame it would come from. So, and there were some times when it was genuine surprise when it would slide from, it would come in from screen right, and you're thinking it's going to come in from the back of the shot or something, and that you'll see the water first, but it doesn't. And there's actually one amazing bit in the film that it's like, well, that is genuinely funny, and not just accidentally funny, where. Tim and Patrick get themselves really, really G'd up to go and get the shark and say, yeah, let's do it. And then it does a hard cut to them saying, we've overslept. And it's like, that's a genuinely funny joke. So I don't know, but it's not like a Sharknado film. It's not trying to be deliberately shit. I think it's one of those things because Tommy Wiseau said it at the beginning of the film in the Q&A, and I'll put some of that in here. You have to have a vision when you're making a film. And it's like, well, he does have a vision for what this is. And I think you're right. I think it was probably shot in order, but it wasn't shown in order.
No. No, there's a map in it that plays a role, but it's not the map that's referenced earlier in the film as being a different thing that seems to be setting up either a metaphor that's not explored or a subplot that's not explored. And then they introduce this map later on, and I'm convinced that scene was shot earlier and meant to be the other map. Because there's a treasure map.
And yeah, because there's a big cross on it or a star which no one references, no one points to. They're all pointing away. And it's like, presumably that's where the treasure is.
It's
a lost subplot. It's like the private life of Sherlock Holmes. There's an entire 1 hour subplot that's been removed from the feature.
I was thinking a lot of the Billy Wilder film, The Private Life of Sherlock Holmes, when I was watching this film. I was wondering, because that's the thing, is that you're watching this film and it's so bizarre. And it is literally a film where there's a massive shark attack and then it cuts to them just hanging out, having a party, and then it goes back.
Not referencing the shark.
Or they'll reference it and they're like, we really need to get back to that.
Yeah, and it's like...
The plan.
And that's the thing is that I was thinking, did this start off as a film about three firefighters that then improved its way into a shark movie? Because that bit when he says to his girlfriend on the boat when they're fishing, I saw a big shark. So no, because there are no sharks in these rivers.
And no one else sees it, and there's no movement in the water, and it was very, it was all off camera, wasn't it? Because I was thinking, the whole thing's going to be off camera.
It's like the Robert Altman film, Thieves Like Us, where you just hear what's happening on the radio and stuff as they're all on the run.
It's
his homage to Reservoir Dogs. You don't see the heist, you just see the afterlife.
There's a protracted sequence in this where they have to get some pigs because they're going to feed...
Oh, Christ.
And they
I wasn't vegetarian already.
And they get live pigs, and then they end up with one single... They get
not to spoil too much.
Yeah, there are live pigs that then they turned out that they don't need, and they've got live pigs in the back of a truck. And the one point I laughed a lot in the film is because all of a sudden it turns into a fucking serial killer movie. You dump the body of a victim in with the still living ones to show what you're going to do to them, and here's your blood. I can't see the pigs. I can imagine the pigs are still in there.
You can hear them.
Yeah.
And they keep saying, we're going to release them. It's like...
into the streets of New Orleans, that famously.
Yeah, that was the thing. Because at that point, it was like, this has got a proper vibe of the Monty Hellman film Cockfighter. Just that whole thing on that ranch with those pigs, it's like...
Because you're expecting not to see the pigs.
Yeah, that's
right.
You're
thinking, we're not going to see the pigs. And it's like... we're gonna see the pigs.
We're also gonna see them try and capture the pigs and put them into the back of the van.
And that was the thing, when they are scurrying around the pig pen trying to get the pigs and the piglets, has to be said, to get them into the van, it's like, this is like a 70s movie where they didn't really care about animal rights.
And they clearly, one of the reasons that they end up with the dead pig, not killing those pigs, is because Tommy thought it would make them seem too villainous.
I don't know, I think he had to be talked out of it. I think it's one of those where there was a scene in there where they do kill the pigs and it was the other cast members saying, no, you'll just lose the audience. You'll lose the audience right now.
It's like the John C. Reilly in, Lars von Trier film Dogville, where he quit the movie because they wanted him to kill a donkey or something.
Oh right, okay.
On camera,
right.
And he's like, "Fuck off, I'm not doing it," and he quit the film.
I think it was Mandalay or Dogville, but there was supposed to be a scene where, and they wanted Lars von Trier wanted him to kill a live donkey.
Yeah, I can imagine there was a touch of that hysteria on this particular film.
I thought they were
just
trying to get free smoked pulled pork.
That's,
I mean, there seems to be a lot of,
there,
like, not product placement, but just kind of visiting bars and restaurants.
There are scenes in bars and restaurants where you think, like, did you get a free meal? Did you just...
Yeah. Free hat?
Yeah, free hat.
Yeah, it could be. But then again, I was thinking
no
that,
credits,
but
so you can't tell. I was waiting for you.
Yeah, there was no credits. There was just a link to a website.
Oh, and it does
website.
Specify that no animals were harmed in making this film.
Oh, does it? Okay, right. Fair enough.
Pigs don't count.
Yeah, but there's no official Humane Association logo with that. It's just like, trust us, guys.
Yeah, trust us, guys. But I was thinking, well, did they go just to local businesses to say, look, you know, you can be in our film, and I did The Room, and The Room was really, really big. But you don't get an outside establishing shot of any of the establishments. So if you wanted to go there, it would be
hard
to find.
Bourbon Street. It does seem to be that, yeah, Tommy just... Does he live around New Orleans?
He's supposedly from New Orleans, isn't he?
Well, that's one of his origin myths.
One of his origin myths, yeah.
It's
bred in a Soviet lab.
That's right.
Yes, the filmmaking equivalent of, yeah. What happened when they combined the DNA of Ivan Drago and Ed Wood. And
I just think, oh my god, there were some times when I was looking at him thinking, it's like watching Mickey Rourke cosplay as Michael Jackson.
Oh yeah, with the multiple belts as he did the Q&A, one of which didn't seem to actually be doing its job as a belt.
Yeah, that's right.
I think he understands the kind of film he made, because he said in the Q&A, as you will hear a bit of, say whatever you want about it, write whatever you want about it, this is, yeah, I don't mind. And it's like, yeah, because you know that this is just a film that people are going to come out of really, really giddy and say, it wasn't good, but it was quite something to see it with an audience. I mean, it was a pretty good audience film.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the main things it had going for it.
It would be interminable to watch it on your own.
Yeah.
Yeah, Christ, no. I mean, it was in focus. That's about the only thing. It actually wasn't even in focus for some of it.
Yeah, some shots
were a bit...
Slipped.
Yeah. Yeah, with an audience, it was fun. But I don't know if I'd want to go back and watch it again with an audience.
But it is weird, because it was a cult movie, and I think it was a cult movie because it's like, well, we are watching something quite extraordinary. This is a film that seems to be entirely improvised, and it's a shark movie, and it's an action film, but because it's improvised, and because Tom is probably about 300 years old, they can't have a lot of action scenes,
and
so
I think they know when they were putting the shark in a lot of the time. They just seem to be referencing a shark, and then hoping they were going to be doing scene.
But there's a chase scene where they're in the car, and they're like, oh, the shark's going to... There are shots where the shark's just like overhead shots, or like shots that are clearly meant to be the shark is catching up. Shark's just not there.
But also, no one in the car's reacting to the shark. I mean, they're being chased by the shark, and they drop the guy off at his house.
Yes.
And they just stop and wait, and you know, and everyone's waiting for him to get eaten, and he literally has a little chat at the window while this shark supposedly still coming, and then just vanishes, because there's no explanation of where this shark is coming from or how it's vanishing into thin air.
That, do you know what that sequence made me think of? Nothing so much as Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas when they pick up Tobey Maguire.
Yes, there was an element of that. I don't think it was conscious, but yeah,
we're in bad country. It's like we're in big shark country.
But I kept thinking there was going to be some voodoo thing, because there's no explanation about where this shark comes from or why it just vanishes and why it keeps eating newsreaders. Although I did like it with the second thing where they just showed the same bit of news footage again, but just without the shark in it.
No, there was a different shark.
The third time in the final bit where it's in the bar playing in the thing, they just had the reporter, and it's like, you're not supposed to notice that it's exactly the same news report as before, but with no sharks.
That's right, the thing, because the second time they used the news report, it's a different shark.
It's a bigger shark.
Yeah. it feels like the shark before was their first go at it, and that they almost, that they probably edited it sequentially as well.
Yeah. And never went back.
With
and
two
never
VHS went... players.
Yes, it was a 1987 approach to editing.
Or there was just edited in camera.
I don't know.
Yes. I mean, it felt like, it did feel like that with some of the scenes ending very abruptly or just jarringly stopping and then waiting
halfway
for the
through
next
a sentence.
Line. Yeah.
It's very easy with a film this wayward and kind of batshit to just read stuff into it. And it's like, is this a metaphor for terrorism? Is it a metaphor for you can just be out and a bomb can go off and it can completely change everything? But then very, very quickly, because we're so used to it now, that everything goes back to normal and people say, oh, we should do something about that, shouldn't we? And then they just never get around to it.
Given where it's set, I think it's more likely to be a metaphor for Hurricane Katrina.
Yes, yes. Or is it like a hurricane metaphor? It's like, yeah, we should do something about these natural phenomena, but we just can't get around to it.
I thought it was just maybe a cry for help.
Yeah, I mean, Tim was definitely like...
I think if he was blinking, it would have help coming written on his eyelids.
Yes, I think you're on something there. The one reason to go back to see this film again is to look at him to see if he's blinking more. Yeah. Help me.
I mean, something was definitely occupying his brain.
Oh, yes, occupying his brain.
And that's the thing, is that it's like, there is a certain talent as well to just committing to a bit. There's a few lines in this film like, oh, you're occupying my brain, or...
You're a delusional man or something. You're a delusional...
You have a delusional mind. Well,
you have a delusional mind.
You have, and it's like, and it gets said, and
but
then it gets said.
No one has said to them, this doesn't make grammatical sense. You know, it's no one whose English is their first language.
Yes, indeed. The actors were very, very good soldiers. I don't think they were questioning the script or the improv that much. But the thing there is, it's like, well, it gets said, it gets said, it gets said. It becomes a bit tiresome. And then it actually lands as something. And it's like, well, you've made that stick, and there's a song. And there were like a couple of songs in there. Because Tommy clearly had a thing about singing dialogue. So they come up with a song and...
I think they were just pissed, weren't they?
Probably were, yeah. But there's a thing there where there's a song that they composed seemingly on the spot that's very easy to learn.
And people were singing on the way out of the cinema.
And during the film as well, because they kept singing it. So you could join in. And it's like, that's clever. That is clever that you've done that, that you've created a four-line song that's very, very easy to learn, and you repeat it in that scene a few times, almost knowing that the audience are going to join in. This is not great filmmaking, but it has something that you don't get in other films. I mean, we saw the Meg 2, actually all of us saw the Meg 2 recently, didn't we? That, I much preferred that to the Meg 2, because it's like, well, that was a vision, that was not a lazy film. That was a vision scorched onto the screen.
There's certainly more people in this film than when I saw Meg 2.
Yes, it was a sellout. But another part of me thinks, if it was to cut to Tommy in a hospital bed and them talking about a car crash, and this is all just like
in his
a coma dream, I would not be surprised, because it has the feel of that. It has the feel of someone who's in a fever dream, kind of misremembering Jaws and thinking that it was the same film as Hatchet.
I was worried that I was somehow drifting in and out of consciousness, having some sort of diabetic incident, because the film didn't make any narrative sense. So I was thinking, have I missed something?
The guy playing Tim will say something that is clearly an effort to get things back on track.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They obviously, you know, it's like improv, they have an in and an out, but he was obviously trying to get them back in. Spent most of his time trying to get them back into the scene so they could finish the scene.
Or try to get them out of the scene because they clearly made the point.
Yeah.
But Tommy just didn't want to end the scene. So, well, that's what editing's for, Tommy. You can edit if you want, but again, it's like he doesn't cut a shot. You just see it go on for way longer than you should.
It was, the whole film was kind of like one of those sort of Judd Apatow Lime Narama things, wasn't it? It just kept
And those can be tiring when everybody on board is a talented comic improviser, not when Tommy seems to have a string in his back and a preset number of lines, and like, yeah, and he runs out of lines to say, and Tim's like, well, I guess we're done with the scene, and Tommy's like, no, we are not.
Because we're going round again.
we are literally going round again.
Oh my god.
Yeah, that's the thing, is that if you're watching talented people do it, it's like, well, okay, this is fine, but it's not as funny as if you actually wrote a joke. Whereas this is like, this isn't very good, and it's very indulgent and tiresome. Oh, no, no, actually, now it's transcended that, and it's slightly sublime. There's just these small moments of improv, particularly from Tommy, who can't act, and I don't think he quite understands how humans work, but he'll just do something.
I don't know, I think he had some pretty, you know, pretty on the ball depictions of romantic relationships in that film.
Well, as I said when I was watching The Room, he writes women so well. I mean, it is one of those things where those two women in this film, or the two main women in this film, I mean, they again were very, very good soldiers. There's that bit when she's kicking him out the house at one point for some reason.
Apparently they keep arguing, but we never see any of the arguments.
Yeah, we just see them in love, like.
In the same way, I think it's exactly the same in The Room. You never really see Lisa and Tommy argue, but apparently their relationship's really tumultuous.
That's right.
And then she's like absolutely fine with him staying out.
Yeah.
After that, but you don't know what the argument was about.
Yeah. But she's throwing all of his clothes out onto the street, and there's a lot of clothes, it seems. And it's like, what is this?
But he wears a lot of clothes at the same time as well. I mean, he's wearing a lot of layers.
Yeah.
It's a lot of gloves.
You can never have too many layers, I think, is...
Yes, in cool Louisiana.
That's right. He was wearing a lot of gloves, and they were mismatched gloves at one point.
And they seem to be like sort of winter, like ski gloves or sports. They weren't sort of weird leather gloves or anything, but they just seemed to be sort of winter wear or sports gloves or something. They weren't particular. It was very odd. But he was wearing an odd pair. He was wearing gloves on stage as well, wasn't he?
Yeah. They say Big Shark is both my contender for Maddest Arseholes Film of the Year and Most Boring Film of the Year, which I think, as a combination, that's...
It was a roller coaster, because there were some points where I was thinking, okay, this is running out of steam now. And then it would do something, and it would be like, okay, that's one of the weirdest and most hilarious things I've ever seen.
The trotters poking out of the inflatable dinghy as they're trying to blow.
Yes,
which is. That dinghy survived as well. There was that huge explosion, and the dinghy was still in the shot at the end. They didn't even bother trying to...
Honestly, we don't actually... This isn't really spoiling anything, because it's like, you can't... It's just
so
weird.
You can't spoil a dream.
Yeah, you can't spoil a dream. You can't spoil a FIFA dream. You just wake up and find that you've soiled yourself. There was, speaking of which, there was actually one amazing bit when one of the characters who's really drunk throws up, and it's at night time, and he has the headlights of a Jeep behind him, and he just catches the light as it all sprays out of his mouth.
Because he's almost throwing up on the camera, isn't he?
But in fact, he manages to miss the camera. It's like, that's actually quite well done.
Because he seems about 3 feet away from the camera. And it was such a funny shot. Yeah, I just laughed at that for about 5 minutes. It was great.
I thought you... I know that I did say at some point you had tears in your eyes. I just assumed you were deeply moved.
Dude, I did actually have to take off my glasses to wipe my eyes at one point because I was laughing so much. I do like the way that the Prince Charles said, yeah, and he'll be out there the whole film signing merchandise, and if you want to do that...
mid-film and just go out and get something signed by Tommy. He doesn't mind.
Yeah, and it's like...
Well, you'll know the bit. You'll know the sequence.
It's like, well, I don't think you will, actually, because... That's the thing about this. Anything could happen in the next minute of this film. It's like...
Or nothing can happen.
Or nothing.
Or nothing could happen.
Or it could be the same thing again.
It could very, very likely be the same thing again. Because there's the Sophia song as well, isn't there, about his girlfriend, when he just sings about how much he loves her. And that got a bit repetitive.
And there's the weird scene where Tim goes running down the corridor in his socks and slams into the door, which I don't think was meant to happen.
No,
and the 2-hour shower.
Oh, yeah.
With his neatly half-shaved face.
These weird things. And it's like, I think Tommy thinks that's how people act. And
well, it's like Man Who Fell to Earth, isn't he? He's presumably, you know, not human. And he's just visiting the planet to steal our water.
Yeah, he is. That's right. He is literally the Man Who Fell to Earth. The only thing that explains his backstory. Okay, so that was... is there anything else to add to Big Shark or your thoughts about it? It was a film that was better than any of the Sharknado films, because they try to be shit, and it's like, well, then you've missed the point. The whole point of this is that I think...
That you're organically shit.
Yeah, is that he tries to do something, and he has a vision. Yeah, with The Room, he was trying to make Kramer versus Kramer. And with this, he's trying to make Jaws. He can't do that, but what you get is something that is so singular and so... not cynical in the way that I think that all the Sharknado and the Sharktopus films are just cynical.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to see the film, you have to see it with an audience. There's no other way to see it. That's and right. I imagine it will be staying at the Prince Charles for quite a while, but I imagine it will be turning up around the country.
Forever.
Yes, but it will probably be turning up around the country at sort of late night screenings at places like the Tyneside and Home and places like that. So, but yeah, that's the only way to see it is with an audience. I would never watch it, you know. Don't even attempt to watch it at home.
It just wouldn't work. Even if it was us three at home with beer and pizza watching it, it wouldn't work.
You'd get distracted.
Yeah, it needs to have about 200 other slightly bemused people, because everyone knew what to expect.
Well,
from
this was
that,
the first screening, wasn't it? So tonight was the first screening in the UK, so it was and no one really knew, seemed to know what to expect.
Well, I think they all thought, yeah, we all know what The Room is like, so how's this going to happen? So how's this going to be like a shark film that's like The Room? And they saw that, but it was like, I can't imagine it, because my mind doesn't work the same way that his mind works.
There are bits, but it's like, I wouldn't have done it like that. Then again, I'm clearly not you. What would people have done if it had been actually good? I know that was an incredibly remote possibility, but what, especially, you know, for many reasons, what would people have done if it had actually just been
The Shallows?
Like,
could you imagine? I don't know. What do you think? How would we have reacted?
I don't know. We probably have to, everyone would be going outside to queue up and say sorry.
People asked him questions in the Q&A, and people like genuinely are fans of The Room and fans of him, I guess, in the same way that people were fans of Ed Wood. But it's like, what would you do if you made something that was genuinely good? How would you even engage with that?
I have to admit, I wasn't thinking, what if this is good? There's that bit at the beginning when they go to a fire and you just have to take their word for it. That's a very, very big fire, because you don't see the fire.
Well, is that amazing? The stock footage of the fire is pretty good. I kept thinking Michael Myers was going to appear out of that. But then there's the other bit where they go to the fire that's the fire bar. Yeah. That's just in front of the camera, and there's three of them standing there going, ooh, and you just got a bad, but they're not good enough to sell the fact that you're looking at a big fire.
And the kids who are just not reacting to being in a fire.
Yes.
Right. And when they pick them up, it's literally like, yoink.
And the debris falling on him, which is a bit like the old Bad Robot app you could get for your phone, where you could put like meteorites and things hitting your rockets. It's like the visual effects are on that sort of level.
Yeah, but phone app.
But the shark was a phone app shark. I mean, it really was, and the water was as well. But there were things about it. I thought, this is sometimes it's a really, really good hangout movie just to watch and just to hang out with these weird people playing pool or just going to one of their houses for a very, very strobe lit party.
I would not play a drinking game with this, because you would be on the floor, because it's more than with Nell and I. I think you'd be absolutely shit-faced if you tried to match them drink for drink.
Yes, I reckon you would be. At some point in his life, Tommy has been in a relationship with a woman whose name ended in A.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of... like a bit of a therapy session for him or something. So, yes, I'm trying to think if there's anything else that... No, I think that's about it for me.
Do you think he lured them back to a house, like in Under the Skin? Like a role reversed Under the Skin?
Well, he does look... There is a scene with him in a boat at night with his hat. He looks like a vampire. He's just like, if the next one that you do is a vampire film, I'd be actually genuinely interested to watch that.
Yes, he has a nocturnal look about him, doesn't he? It's like, and during the hours of day, he just seems slightly out of place. When you see him at night, particularly when he's lit with a blue filter or something in the woods or out on the bayou, it's like, this is your natural habitat. I would
prowling
the bayou at night. Yes.
I just think, yeah, it would be interesting to see what he'd do if he did a vampire movie. And that's a great idea, actually, because it's such a romantic that I think he would make such a wonderful vampire.
Well, also, he's been around for a few centuries, so he can write from experience, you know, write what he knows.
It's like, absolutely.
You made a vampire film that's funnier than Dracula Dead and Loving It.
I was going to say, actually, because I was thinking when you said it, I wonder if there's actually going to be a shark in this. And then you said, I think the shark might just be a metaphor. And then it appeared pretty quickly afterwards. Oh, I'll go. That is a genuine surprise. If there wasn't a shark in this film, I think the audience would have turned against the movie. I think they would have felt shortchanged.
Yes. Yeah, definitely. I mean, obviously the shark was an afterthought, but it was... Because I was expecting it to be like, you know, something shitty like Shark in Venice, where it's literally just cruising the bayous or something. But this was... No, it's actually... When it came out in the street, I was stunned.
won't actually spoil the first appearance of the shark, because I literally did not think that was going to be the scene when you saw the shark. And it was, so I won't say when you first see it, but it is quite memorable the first time the shark appears in this movie. Yes. Anyway, yeah. Anything else?
It was certainly a way to spend a period of time.
Yes.
I enjoyed it.
And what was it your friend said is the best film he's seen today?
Yeah. That's great. Do you know what? No, you know what I was about to say? I watched one of the Rise of the Foot Soldiers films this morning because I'm just watching them because that's apparently a thing I do now.
Oh, Rob and I did the Essex gangster films on Prime and it was terrible.
I'm going to be thinking about this more than I'm going to be thinking about Rise of the Foot Soldier Marbella.
Oh god, yeah, that is the worst one. That is the one where they clearly had half a script and said, well, we just want to have a holiday as well, so let's just put our holiday footage together with this half a script we've got.
As opposed to no script and just improv the entire thing.
Yeah, it
is. Which is, I mean, that would be good to watch a Rise of the Foot Soldier film that is all improv.
I would also accept Tommy Wiseau in a gangster movie.
I don't know. I think it would be... No, I am sold on him as a vampire now in a horror film. I want his next film to be a vampire horror film.
Sorry, but in this scenario, he has to be dressed as like a 1930s gangster and it's a contemporary film.
He's like, okay, now I'm beginning to come around.
Could always flick in a silver dollar.
And... Yeah.
But also, they wear
but you never see him catch it.
Never catch it. Always goes up. Never.
And he needs a hat. So, you know, yes. He'll definitely probably go for that more than the other one, because anything that involves hats, that or Napoleon. You're doing Napoleon.
Right, okay then. Well, if there's nothing else, let's do the plugs and whatnot. So, Adrian, as you are the guest, if people wanted to find you on the internet to see if you've got anything else to say about Tommy or Big Shark or The Room, or just to see what you're up to, where can they do that?
I'm on Instagram and Letterboxd at Adrian J. Zak, Z-A-K.
Yes, you should check them out because the pictures are good and the films are good, and it's always quite interesting to see what star ratings you give them. Sometimes I agree, sometimes you're wrong. So terrible. And Rob?
Well, as of next week, you'll no longer be able to find me on Twitter.
One of us.
But yeah. You can find my writing, such as it is, at Of All The Film Sites, www.ofallthefilmsites.com. If you've enjoyed listening to this podcast, we also have done a podcast on the movie Highlander, a scene-by-scene analysis in general that may or may not have more content coming. That's probably not. At least in the Pacific.
I think it's done.
It's probably done. But
thank
yeah,
God, if you, no Highlander 2.
But yeah, that's called Another Time McLeod, and you can listen to that wherever you listen to this, and you can also drop us a Highlander-themed email at whowantstopodforever@gmail.com.
And I think we can all agree that Highlander is a slightly better film than Big Shark.
Highlander 2 might be a slightly better film than Big Shark.
I would disagree with that. Highlander 2 is not as good as Big Shark.
That's supposed to quote.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah, so for me, yeah, I mean, I'm on Twitter for the rest of this week just to put up a pinned tweet to say where else you can find me when I come off, because I just don't want to make Elon Musk any richer because it's a fucking horrible cesspit and he's just terrible. And why would I support something that he is in charge of? But you can find me on Letterboxd at letterboxd.com/robdan, Instagram at robdan75, and you can find my writing at electric-shadows.com. And if you want to follow the podcast, then you can do that. Well, not on Twitter, really. So, go over to Instagram. It's at The Movie Robcast. And if you want to drop us an email, you can do that at movierobcast@gmail.com. Thank you very much for listening. If you can get along to a cinema that is showing Big Shark, then do. It is something. It is that. And, just remember, guys, cowboys don't cry. And there we go.
What would hurt more, being torn apart by a shark or by Lisa?
I don't know, you tell me. That's a good one. Hold on, next question. By the way, do you want to hear the news? Very quickly. Do you know the shark travel, you know? But when you see, I don't want to do the spoiler, but remember, shark disappear and appear, right? Go through the ocean, hit San Francisco, and maybe travel to where? To London. Never mind. Watch it for Big Shark. Move on. Next question.
If you made a sequel, would it be called Bigger Shark or Too Big Too Shark?
You didn't get in my little statement, but I was saying travel. Remember, shark travel.
I have these feelings. I have electricity that's coming to my head that is going to San Francisco, then to London. Move on, next question.
Thank you.